right, welcome to Out of the Blue, a podcast that has caused acute seizures in children aged 9 to 11, but has been absolved of all liability in that case. I am Jared Stormer of MazeandBrew.com. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, also of MazeandBrew.com, my hetero life mate. Andy, you menacing yet charming snake oil salesman, how the hell are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, sir. The Adult Kickball League is, you know, underway right now. We're 0-1, but we're going to mount a comeback to salvage the season. How are you?
Man, you really are the pinnacle of modern-day athletics. We salute you for your service.
It's hard to be me sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a bunch of white people standing in a field holding solo cups and playing kickball is really what sports is all about.
Hey, they're in koozies, okay?
Show some damn respect. But I'm doing well, man. Excited for this podcast. We're here to break down Rutgers. That's not what I'm excited about. But we have one of my lifelong best friends, Wes Anderson, the man responsible for all of the music at Out of the Blue and around Maze and Brew as well. He'll be joining us. And we're talking 90s movies tonight. What makes that decade so special? Very excited for that. Maybe just the best decade of all time. For movies, obviously I'm biased being a 90s baby, but man, is it up there.
Oh yeah, this, the 70s, like I feel like it's a really close contest. Every decade has its own little genre or subgenre, but the 90s hit so many key points, especially in our life with like really great shitty movies. So it always has a special home here.
Yeah, it most definitely does. And I mean, the 80s has got a lot going on too, trust me, I get that. And 80s babies, they ride hard for their decade, I get that. But the fact of the matter is 90s is better, and we're going to break it down. But we do have some Michigan content. It is off-season. This is peak off-season. We're deep into the off-season now. But we're like 60-something days from kickoff, so it'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming up really fast, and I can't believe we're already halfway through. Halfway through June, a little more than half. Michigan news has been coming out. Baseball team's kicking ass. It's been a nice little summer so far.
It has, yeah. Baseball team in the College World Series right now. I haven't been able to catch any of it at all. And like we said last podcast, I'm not going to sit here and, boast about my knowledge of the Michigan baseball team. But that being said, I mean, it's Michigan athletics. Obviously, wherever you go blue.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a fact. Michigan baseball has a savior. It's superstar Kenny Chesney from the Detroit Free Press yesterday. So, I mean, there's that. God bless Kenny Chesney and God bless our baseball team. That's all I got.
Kenny Chesney plays for our baseball team. Isn't he like a 55-year-old country musician?
Over under 55, what do you think?
Kenny Chesney? I have no idea. I have nothing to base this on. I don't know. I wouldn't know him if I walked past him in the middle of a Michaels.
He kind of looks like he's a part of Woody's Roundup, like the fourth member, along with the prospector and Jesse.
Sure. We'll say just under.
Yep, you got it. 51, man. He's only 5'6", so.
Why the hell are we talking about Kenny Chesney? We've got better things
Michigan
to talk
about. Michigan news. Let's go to our Michigan news.
We don't have much better things to talk about than Kenny Chesney, but we do, such as Brandon Peters has announced that he will be transferring to Illinois. It is official. I'm okay with this move. Illinois is a pretty god-awful team, and I don't think we're going to end up seeing him, but I wish him all the best. Your thoughts?
Two words. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't know that Lovie Smith's going to be there much longer. Illinois, like, other than the team we're going to be discussing here in a minute, Rutgers, is without a doubt the laughing stock of the Big Ten. I mean, Maryland has come a long way. It's and so is Purdue. It's definitely Illinois and Rutgers there at the bottom of the basket.
Yeah, I mean, Champaign, Illinois is a gorgeous place, you know?
True.
I mean, it's a fantastic little city. Their football team is complete shit. Have they been good since they had Rashard Mendenhall and Juice Williams? I think that was the last time they were relevant.
I think so. Isn't that the last time they beat us as well?
Possibly so. It's been a while. I kind of always forget Illinois is even in the Big Ten, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's been a while since they've done anything. Ever since we had that like 140-point nonsensical game in the Rich Rod era, I've kind of forgotten they existed, and I'm fine with that, actually. But lately, their fans have been talking a lot. I have no idea what for, but just maybe because they're bored and, you know, they haven't seen a quality victory in a while. But they're trying to make it a rivalry with Michigan. I don't really see that, but good on you, Illinois. What is an Illini anyway? It's not a thing.
I don't know. I just feel like it's like a fighting person from Illinois. But everybody I've met from Illinois has been really pleasant. So I don't picture them fighting. It's like being a fighting Canadian. Like, no. It just doesn't exist.
Well, that's an oxymoron.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing Canadians do is just, you know, cheer when people get injured. You know, I don't think people from Illinois do that.
Yeah, that's all I've seen Canadian people do, that and apologize every time they open the door for you. Like, whoops, sorry there, and let you through.
Yeah, they pass you bags of milk. I mean, great people.
fine people. But, I mean, hopefully he enjoys that because he's not going to see a lot of wins there. We will not see Brandon Peters. I doubt that he'll be eligible this year. I don't see any reason why he would be. But then again, Justin Fields was eligible for Ohio State, and that makes no sense. So.
Yeah, is he a grad transfer, though? I don't know if he graduated early or something.
He may have graduated early.
Yeah, he's a grad transfer, 2 years remaining.
Okay, so yeah, he could start, and he'll probably start for him this year then. So in that scenario, it's good. I mean, he's going to get on the field and get a chance to show what he's got. I mean, we liked his potential. I still like his potential. He's just been passed up by like four guys, so.
Yeah, Illinois in the 3 years under Lovie Smith has never finished higher than 93rd in points per game.
Oh, man. So he's not really going to – don't expect a lot of fireworks from Brandon Peters, which really I never did to begin with. I mean, the guy looks like he just downed a bottle of Robitussin after every interview. So.
Yeah, it'll be just like his 2017 campaign, just in Illinois, so it looks more normal.
Exactly. That's what we come to expect from Illinois, but – all jokes aside, wish him the best. You know, didn't work out at Michigan, but the dude was a gamer for us there when we needed him. I mean, don't blame him for getting injured against Wisconsin. Had he been able to play the rest of that game against Wisconsin and against Ohio State, who knows? Big what if, Brandon Peters.
As a Michigan quarterback, he one time said Peyton Manning was the true GOAT and not Tom Brady on Instagram, and at that moment, I just knew it wasn't going to work.
That's true. That can't work out after that. As much as I loved watching Peyton Manning, it's clear who the GOAT is, especially if you're wearing the winged helmet, bruh.
Yeah, like, how do you have a reputation to uphold here? Like, even if you got to fake it. Come on, Brandon.
Exactly. You can say that if you get drafted or, like, after you graduate, but not during.
No, not the only thing he could have said that was worse was, like, I'm the true GOAT. But besides that.
Just like, all right, I'm closing my laptop for the day.
That's only John O'Korn would say that.
John O'Korn probably would say that. Fine head of hair and the arm of a wet spaghetti noodle.
Speaking of a fine head of hair, you heard the Jordan Poole news recently.
What is the Jordan Poole news? I don't think I have.
Of the mock draft where Jordan Poole is predicted to go in the second round and Iggy Brazdeikis is not.
Yes, I have heard this. And, you know, I've been following the NBA mock drafts, not just for the Michigan guys. I'm an NBA fan, but very interested that there's no Charles Matthews. Okay, I guess that makes sense after the injury. But I've not seen Iggy Brazdeikis in one of them, and I've seen Poole in most of them. I mean, you and I think, have been pretty clear on our thoughts on this about who's the better NBA prospect. Obviously, we're not NBA scouts, but we have watched a lot of Jordan Poole. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that athleticism skews the grading of potential. Now, stay with me for a second. You look at the NBA Finals. There were a lot of good, smart basketball players, the Fred VanVleet of the world, the Norman Powells, that aren't crazy super athletic, but they understand space and they know how to attack. They know that they play fundamentally sound. And I think Iggy Brazdeikis has that, and he has the tenacity to, you know, work through it, play hard, and do this. I saw Jordan Poole disappear in more games than any Michigan player in recent memory that had his, like, level of game. So I think his athleticism is skewing the grading of his potential, and that's what's putting him on boards. But if you want somebody that's going to play better basketball, it's Iggy Brazdeikis. This isn't a question.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. And I stayed with you throughout that because it makes perfect sense to me. And I was going to say something similar, is that I think teams are going to look at his tape and see a very select few plays of a guy with exceptional ball handling skills, which Jordan Poole has. He has great ball handling skills, but not consistently and not to the point where he could get his own shot. I mean, we were designing the offense to go through him at times. Like, we were the guy in the tournament saying, look, it's got to be Jordan Poole's time. And he was just disappearing night after night. And that was with us, like, really trying to get him going. So I have concerns that he can do that long term, like what you see in those clips. Whereas, like, you watch Darius Garland, and that dude can hit the ball's on a rope, and he does it consistently, gets his own shot. He can maneuver in and out of traffic. You see the change of direction, which you see with Poole at times, but like you said, just not often enough. And yeah, he could definitely hit. Like, that's not impossible. Super athletic, has a bit of a stroke, like a shooting stroke. Has not had a stroke physically, I don't think.
Let's hope not.
Well, maybe he did during that Sweet 16 game. But that being said, like, I just, it's not been consistent, whereas Iggy Braz was consistent every time, and I think he's a more immediate contributor. And with Poole, you're just taking a flyer and being like, well, maybe in 5 years, this guy, everything hits. And even then, I think he's like a Jordan Clarkson.
That's what it feels like. It's really hard for me to see Poole just becoming this like NBA contributor. I know he can shoot well, but it's like, is he going to be upset over touches? Because everything that came out from his dad's side seemed that he was really upset in Beeline's system. And if you're going to be upset in John Beeline's system, you're not going to get along well in the NBA. Like, imagine if you're playing like with a superstar that's going to control the ball, like a LeBron James, like a James Harden, and they're going to be very ball dominant at times, and then they're going to pass you the ball and expect you to make a shot. And if you miss it or if you go missing, it's like, enjoy the bench. You got to be ready when your number is called, especially when you're just trying to earn reps. And I don't see Poole doing that.
Yes, I agree entirely. I mean, he's only going to get so many opportunities. Like, they're not going to give him a long leash. And, I mean, if he starts, you know, improving in practice, and I mean, it's going to take time. It's going to take reps. And honestly, like, going to a coach like John Beeline, I know he might hate that and his dad might hate that, but, like, that was the coach for him, a coach that's going to teach you fundamentals and how to be a basketball player. So, I mean, if he ends up in Cleveland, like in the second round or something, like that is a good fit for him, whether he likes it or not. Because, I mean, if he's going to a team like the Lakers or somebody like that, I mean, he's just going to have such a short leash. It's going to be a tough situation for him. But I'm pulling Iggy Braz. I'm hoping that he gets drafted, because I really think he can be a contributor sooner, maybe in the 2 to 3 year time frame.
I do as well. Speaking of the Lakers, with, you know, LeBron tends to, you know, like playing with veterans, especially to surround himself and the other superstars. Are you worried at all that Mo Wagner could be on the trade block?
Yes, most definitely. He is on the trading block. If they can get something that will help them win now, they 100% will. They are not in the position right now to balk at that. It is win now mode. You've got to maximize this window. And maybe that it wouldn't be the worst thing for Mo Wagner. Maybe he doesn't need to be surrounded by all that. But at the same time, like playing with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, like, man, is that going to create some space on the floor? And the kid can shoot. He can create his own shot. Like, if he can beef up a little bit and, you know, learn the fundamentals of playing in the NBA and adjust to the speed, like, that's a valuable guy to have. LeBron likes shooters, especially big shooters. He could be a great piece for them.
He does, but he just hates the youth. Like, if he could flip Mo Wagner for, like, Rashard Lewis's corpse somewhere, like, he would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Ray Allen somehow comes back for one more go. Yeah, they'd chop Mo Wagner in a heartbeat, no doubt about it. And that's fine. I don't really like the Lakers. We'll take him on the Pistons happily.
Maybe the Cavs will deal with him too.
Yeah,
send back to Beeline.
That's what I'm saying. I just want Beeline to just get all the Michigan guys together. Like, sign Caris LeVert. You know, you're gonna have some cap space here. Sign him. Give him a near max. Go get Mo Wagner, draft Iggy Braz. This I'm fine with it. Bring it on.
It wouldn't surprise me to see him turn Kevin Love into a top 10 pick.
I would do it. I would absolutely do it if you could, to a team that's in win now mode. But you got to take on his contract. He got a pretty nice size one recently. So, but yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Beeline does if he reunites with any of those Michigan guys. I really hope so. It'd just be fun to watch, and I'm a bit of a Cavs fan. You know, being from Toledo, Ohio, you're in between Detroit and Cleveland, so I like them both.
Kind of pull for both. You just hope for, like, you know, regional competency. It's all you want from your team.
Regional competency. Well stated, sir.
Thank you. That's all we want. We just want, you know, exceptionalism from Michigan football.
Exactly. Speaking of which, segue. There's been some Big Ten coaching rankings that have been coming out. There's been two of them that I've seen, one from Athlon, one from CBS Sports, ranking the current Big Ten coaches. As far as where things stand now, obviously there's been some shakeup with Urban Meyer leaving, so they've got some new number ones, but there is some disparity amongst the lists, and I'm guessing some disparity amongst the fans as well, the Michigan fans, but I want to hear your take on this. I'm very interested to see how you like these rankings. Do you want to break them down, the Athlon and the CBS ones?
Why don't we break down our rankings of the coaches back and forth, and we can start at 14 and work our way to 1, sir.
I like it. All right. Hit me with 14. I think we'll both agree.
Chris Ash. No hesitation.
It's Sorry. Chris Ash. I wrote his name as Chris Ass accidentally, and then I went to correct it, and I was like, nah.
Like, it's low-hanging fruit of a joke, but it's still a tasty fruit.
You think I'm not going to take that tasty-ass fruit, especially when it's got ass in there? You don't know me.
Don't you put ass around me, sir. 13. This will be interesting. I have Lovie Smith, Illinois, for mine.
I agree. I would go Lovie Smith. Yeah, we can talk about the other rankings, but I would go Lovie Smith as the next worst. I mean, this guy went to the Super Bowl with the Bears, and like he's had what, this is year four for him, and he hasn't made any discernible gains. Yeah, he's next.
I feel like Lovie Smith is just kind of robotic. Like, you gotta, like, sometimes on the sideline, it looks like they forgot to charge him. Like, he's just standing there with a blank stare on his face.
The perfect candidate.
Exactly. 12 for me, Mike Locksley from Maryland.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to be ranked high when you're a first time head coach. Did great things at Alabama, but so did what was that guy that came to save the Brady Hoke offense, whose name I've now forgotten.
Is it Al Borges?
Who no, was it? It was the one that came after him, Doug Nussmeier.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see with Mike Locksley. But he inherits a good situation.
11, once again, speaking to first year, it's only there because he's unproven. This he could be number one by next year. It's Ryan Day.
Yeah, I mean, you got to put him at the 10 or 11 range. I'll go Tom Allen here. I'll put Ryan Day a little bit above there just because I watched and still have a hole in my heart from how much he shredded the Michigan D against the coordinator that he coached with. So he gets some props for that from me, but yeah, he's right around there.
See, my 10 is Tom Allen just because he always has Indiana ready to play Michigan so damn tough every year, it feels like.
Well, he's only been there like two now.
Yeah, and every year's been a damn dogfight. Now they have a freshman running back he's recruited that feel like he's going to turn into a stud.
They've been a dogfight even before Tom Allen, but yeah, I'm not going to split hairs over the rankings here.
Yeah. Number nine, go.
Number nine for me, I'll go P.J. Fleck. I think that makes sense. Honestly, like, you might even put Tom Allen above of P.J. Fleck, but P.J. Fleck's starting to turn it around. I think this year you're going to see Minnesota be a much better team. It may only be an 8-win team, but I think it'll be a better team.
I go nine Jeff Brohm, and I go 8 P.J. Fleck.
Yeah, I got Jeff Brohm next just because he beat Ohio State, so I got him ahead. He's got a bigger win on his resume, but they're pretty neck and neck there. I'm fine with that.
7. Now we're getting into, like, you know, the upper echelon of the Big Ten. Like, a lot of good programs up here. 7 for me, though, is James Franklin. I think he's a better recruiter than he is a coach, and a lot of his success is contributed to his OC position. Who is his OC? It's now Mississippi State. His name's eluding me.
Morehead.
Joe Morehead. And I think that kind of showed last season. And he's 7 for me. I'm sorry.
Wow. I rank James Franklin low, which is interesting because we'll get into where Athlon and CBS have him as well. The man ran the ball on 4th and 5 within the closing seconds of the game when Trace McSorley was just torching Ohio State. He ran it up the middle.
It makes no sense.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I've seen some dumbfounding moves, the attacking the fans. Like, yeah, I think they'll come back down to earth a little bit. I mean, that's low, though. I got Scott Frost at 7, and he could jump big this year. Watch out for Nebraska in the coming years.
Okay, 6 for me is Scott Frost. So, once again, I'm right in there with you.
Okay, at 6, I'm going to put – this is a tough one. I go back and forth here. I'll go Paul Christ.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I'll go Paul Christ here. I mean, given their schedule, given the offensive lines that they've had, given the running backs that they've had, I think that they've honestly kind of underwhelmed. I think that their win total is kind of like what Michigan's doing. Like, you're expected to get that win total. I haven't seen any sort of coaching mastery from Paul Christ, and him and Jim Harbaugh kind of have that same philosophy, offensive philosophy of, you know, steady ball control, you know, very acute play calling. I think that it's outdated. I think Paul Christ is going to be in for a wake-up call when he doesn't have Jonathan Taylor.
I think Paul Christ is one of the two best play callers in the Big Ten.
He's a great play caller, but what has it gotten him? Where are their huge win under Paul Christ?
Huh? Not to dig into it, but I have Paul, like, spoiler ahead, just Paul Christ is my 3. He's not in the top 2, but he's my 3. So I have Franklin at 7, Scott Frost at 6. My number 5, Mark D'Antonio, Michigan State.
Interesting. See, that one, I'll battle back on that one because he has had a playoff appearance. He's got more accolades than Jim Harbaugh. That's just the fact of the matter. He's on the decline, though.
That's my thing right now.
Yeah, right now it looks like he's on the decline. This is a big year for him. They didn't make any changes really to their staff. They just shook it up. And I could see them, if they have like another 6-7 win season, like people in East Lansing might start to grumble a little bit. He's done a lot for them, though, and his accolades will put him higher for me.
He also has a sexual assault scandal right now.
I mean, when does that school not have some sort of assault around him? I mean, if we're talking about the character of the program and the man, then it's 14 every time. We need to make another space lower than 14. But
that's fair.
Yeah, but okay, after that, I'm going to go Kirk Ferentz for me.
That's my four.
Yeah, he's my five. Just a steady hand, doing quite a bit with Iowa's, got some big wins, beat the brakes off Ohio State a couple years ago at Kinnick, beat Michigan in, you know, what was maybe our best team that we've had under Harbaugh at Kinnick with an injured Wilton Spate. It was at Kinnick at night, but I mean, his team show up for big games. He's got the big wins. You know, he's taken them to the Rose Bowl, got obliterated, but puts guys in the NFL. I think Kirk Ferentz does a lot with a little.
Yeah, comes from the lineage of Bill Belichick, working those Browns teams with Saban. I mean, he's been around, and he knows his football. I think his team should be better with all the talent they have in Iowa, all the talent he gets there. But like you said, though, steady hand's the way to put it. He was my four. He was your five.
Mm-hmm.
You already know my four and three. So what are your four and three?
Are you keeping track of this, by the way?
I have track of mine, not yours.
You piece of shit. I'm just kidding. No, it's all right. I guess I can go back and listen to the pod. All right. So I'm at four and three, and I just went Kirk Ferentz. I'm going to go James Franklin four, and that's just based off the fact that he has won a Rose Bowl. Once again, the accolades, I give them some credence, but I think that he's a product, like you said, of recruiting. I think he's not a great coach. I think that he'll get exposed at times, but, I mean, he's still going to win quite a few games just on the recruiting that they're getting. But I don't buy James Franklin as a coach. And my three will be Mark D'Antonio.
Okay. All right.
I'll go Mark D'Antonio. We kind of already discussed him. I mean, you can put him higher, but the dude's on the decline, no doubt about it. So
the same top two. And I was this is kind of a, like, honestly, like a coin flip for me, because I'm a huge Pat Fitzgerald guy. I think what he does with the talent he gets in Northwestern. And fuck it, not to be a homer. Pat Fitzgerald won, Jim Harbaugh two, just because of what he does with that little talent. And it's easy to sit here and say Jim Harbaugh is the best coach in the Big Ten, but he hasn't touched his expectations.
Yep.
Hasn't won a Big Ten. He's fallen short. Paul Fitzgerald, I feel like, always overachieves with what he does, gets the most out of his players, and I just love his personality and everything he does as a coach.
We didn't even compare notes. I love it when this happens. We are in agreement, sir. And we'll talk about where these other agencies have ranked Pat Fitzgerald, which is borderline criminal. You said it. I can't say it any better. The expectations at Northwestern are miles apart of what they are at Michigan. And with what he's done, with what he had, like, they wouldn't trade him for Nick fucking Saban. At Northwestern. They wouldn't do it. And, I mean, what he's built there, and, like, now they're starting to get recognized a little more. Now they're going to get some recruits in. They play everyone like a dog. Just well-coached. I mean, he's the best player that's ever played there, the best coach that's ever played there. And, like you said, the expectations are different at Michigan. You beat Ohio State this year. You win a Big Ten championship. Sure, I'll move you up to number one, Jim Harbaugh. But until then, I got Pat Fitzgerald number one.
Yeah, and this is one of the schools we always talk about. Michigan has, like, a hard academic standing and stuff to, like, overcome. Northwestern's in the same boat. It's hard as hell to get Northwestern.
What I'm saying.
So these kids have to, like, meet all these academic standards. And, yeah, Clayton Thorson sucked this last year. He didn't live up to what he should have. But he's got a five-star quarterback in town now that's transferred there. Northwestern makes me nervous.
They should make you nervous. Them in Indiana, like, they're not pushovers. And, like, on any given day, they can give anyone outside of Alabama and Clemson fits.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's crazy. We both had Fitz at number one.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I had it like 1-2 Harbaugh and Fitzgerald. I didn't know which way I was going to go, but I mean, just hearing your points and hearing it out loud, it's clear to me that it's Fitzgerald.
That's how I was. I was like on my list. I had Jim Harbaugh. Well, I was like, I can't really put him there because this could be like the end for him. While Pat Fitzgerald basically has tenure at Northwestern.
No, he's never leaving. He's going to be there like Bill Snyder, age 85. You know, he's going to have the colostomy bag out there coaching him to 9 wins.
Yeah, and in all fairness of his colostomy bag, Bill Snyder was still churning out like BCS bowl level teams in like 2013. So
that's what I'm saying. And the dude fought at Iwo Jima.
And he's still winning games.
Still winning games. So
he retired when they started sucking. He's like, nah, fuck this. And came back, rolled up in the wheelchair, like, I'm taking over.
I've got this. But so let's break down. Athlon Sports has it ranked this way: 14, Chris Ash; 13, Mike Locksley; 12, Lovie Smith; 11, Tom Allen. Pretty similar here. There is some disparity here in these later ones between us, them as well. But I think we're all kind of in the same boat. They got 10, Ryan Day; 9, PJ Fleck; 8, Paul Crist. So they got him significantly lower than you do. 7, Jeff Brohm; 6, Pat Fitzgerald. 6.
Insulting.
Is insulting. 5, Kirk Ferentz; 4, Scott Frost. That's ridiculous. He's won 4 games at Nebraska. 3, James Franklin; 2, Mark D'Antonio; 1, Jim Harbaugh. And look, we appreciate you throwing us a bone, but he's not.
No, it's not. And the fact that we have James Franklin so high, I think there's going to be a significant decline coming up. And a lot of Penn State fans I talk to don't like James Franklin either. He's just kind of an asshole.
He is kind of an asshole. I mean, you add that to the fact that he's just had some like terrible coaching moments, and I think Moorhead was a big reason there for this. Moorhead and Barkley and McSorley, yep. Like, that's quite a trio there. Like, you can make it happen with that trio. So CBS has it this way: Chris Ash, Mike Locksley, Tom Allen, Lovie Smith, Ryan Day, PJ Fleck, Jeff Brohm, Scott Frost at 7, which is a little more reasonable. Paul Crist at 6. So once again, well, what did you have Crist at?
3.
3, yeah. So you view him a little more favorably than the rest of us. Ferentz at 5, Fitzgerald at 4, that's better. Harbaugh at 3 behind D'Antonio, and Franklin at 1. And that's CBS Sports, mind you. CBS Sports is like right up there with ESPN as far as being a major outlet. So
see, that's what I'm saying. Like, with your rankings and you criticizing where I have Paul Crist, I'm fine. But a list that has James Franklin at number 1 or 2 or 3, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
Paul Crist can be there. You can criticize me, my good friend, but not them. You can't have James Franklin number 1 and expect me to respect your list.
Literally, it's just because they happened to eke out that win against Ohio State. Ohio State, like, they're bound to get got by somebody. It's never going to be us because they'll never overlook that game. And, like, they happened to get through them, and then they happened to get a USC team. Or is that who they beat in that?
Oh,
they
didn't even. Yeah, USC gets Sam Darnold through that stupid-ass interception late in the Rose Bowl.
Like, I mean, and it happened, and you can't take that away from them. But, I mean, people are just acting like that's going to be the norm, and I don't see it.
We beat the ass off of them, like, 42-14 or something. Like, no.
Yeah, we've done that twice. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're breaking up down our next opponent in our opponent series. That is Rutgers, a.k.a. the second bye week. This should be a quick one, should be pushovers. And then we're getting into our 90s discussion. We'll be right back after this.